Just a friendly reminder that not next week, but the week after. Next week is going to be a Chazak week, which I think is a new institution here. You know all the questions that we never got to in the Book of Bereishis? I'm going to go through them and see which ones we should put up for discussion. See, very often it's happened that people have come over and said, like, oh, I wish we would have gotten to that one, I wish we had gotten to that one. So I think a good week for a Chazak is a good week to put them together. We'll take a look and we'll add whatever we don't get to tonight also. And as a Hashem, Ot Chazon Lamoed, there are other good things to come. The week after, which is the first week of the Book of Shmos, that'll be Thursday night, the 27th of December. So we're going to have one of our Rebbeim from our Masifta is going to be here. Unfortunately, that night I won't be here. I'm going to be in an all-day training all the way out in Hapag. So Be'ezos Hashem, Marvin or Yossi will introduce, and we'll bring a crowd with us so that that whole Shabbos we're going to have the opportunity to hear from some of the Rebbeim in the Masifta, and with God's help, we'll be able to really enjoy ourselves. I will have more information. I can't let out all the secrets, partially because I don't know the answer yet. Okay, tonight I want to realize that Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef, first of all, tonight's Chabura and learning in the shul all week long are sponsored by Sarah and Nachi Feit and family in memory of the late, great Mrs. Shelley Feit, who was Rachel Bas Reb Noach, Alah Shalom, and of course the Divrei Torah here are going to be offered Leilui Nishmasa as well. One of the questions this evening, I don't think any Torah in this city can be learned without recognizing the incredible impact of Moreinu HaRav Teitz Zatzal, whose Yahrzeit was yesterday, and of course we're going to see, potentially, we'll see which questions we get to, but one of them clearly will not only be a source of memory for Hagon HaRav Teitz, but will maybe even be able to be Mekayim Sivsos of Dovavos Bekever, where the Chazal tells us that when a tzaddik passes away, and we quote Torah in his name, it's as if his lips literally move. He's still alive. And that, I think, comes out very much in this week's parsha. Yosef HaTzadik makes the declaration, right? And Yosef, you guys are telling me that your father's going to drop dead, right? And who is this Yosef? He was a Jew the whole time. As Yaakov Avinu hears, and he turns, and he hears, Rav Od Yosef Beni Chai. He says, all of a sudden, he's so excited that his son is still alive. Rav Shimshon David Pinkins comments, and he says, it's amazing that Yaakov Avinu realizes Chiyum Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. He hears all these other things about not only is Yosef alive, but he's running the entire world. And what is more important to Yaakov when he takes the message in? That he's Chai. Says Rav Shimshon David Pinkins, in life, it's not a big deal how much material success you have. The biggest deal is, are you still alive? What makes life in Yiddishkeit? What makes life is, are you Torah true? Are you Torah true in Torah mitzvos? Are you a Shomer Torah mitzvos? Even when you're out and about, especially when you're out and about in the world at large. And Yosef HaTzadik really serves for us as a paradigm in that regard. And so I think the questions we're going to deal with tonight all seem to focus around that general theme of trying to be a Yosef and what happens when we're not a Yosef. So let's start at the beginning. Question number one. I heard that you're not allowed to praise a non-Jew. Does that mean we can't give a gift or a tip? And how does the Rambam praise Aristotle? And what about medical advancements that are made by non-Jews? Are we not allowed to benefit from those? Is there a anti-BDS? That's question number one. Question number two. Can you help us out, Rabbi? Over Shabbos, we had guests, and we were discussing a certain scandal in the Orthodox Jewish community. Now, somebody mentioned that he or she saw the alleged perpetrator and was wondering why he was still wearing a yarmulke. If he was going to sin, shouldn't he have taken off his yarmulke to minimize the chilul Hashem? I disagreed with the person. Who's right? It's question number two. I'm seeing a smile. He's already saying himself. He's had that question at Shabbos tables before also. Okay. Number three, it was not Yudi who asked the question. Okay?
You assumed that it was at my Shabbos table, not that I was the subject.
No, chas v'shalom, come on. Question number three, come on, Yudi, how long do we know each other? Question number three, I hear a lot of different comments from a lot of different types of rabbis. The more open, quotation marks, speak of a concept called tikkun olam, as if it's the most important mitzvah in Judaism. Yosef certainly seems to demonstrate the care of tikkun olam, and the Torah spends a lot of time on it. Do we have an obligation to influence non-Jews religiously? What are the requirements of Jews to get involved in humanitarian missions, such as helping victims of earthquakes or helping the poor in third world countries? That's question number three. And of course, the last of the four that I have this evening is, At work, we have lively debates. Last week, we got into a discussion, and I had to explain my position based on my religion. My coworkers now want me to explain the sources for my position to them. Is that mutter? What if I am invited to present at a legal seminar, or a bioethical seminar, or a technology seminar, to present a Jewish view on the matter at hand? Clearly, I'll need to present halachic material to a mixed Jewish and non-Jewish audience. Is this a problem? The four questions, right? Praise, the yarmulke, the situation of tikkun olam, and the situation of the guy at the conference teaching Torah. Which of them should we start with? Number four. So, of course, as a classic Elizabethan, Yossi jumps right up and realizes that this issue jumps right away towards a classic Elizabeth issue. Go ahead, Yossi, take it away. What are some of the issues we need to consider? Remember, the question is, I'm asked to present Torah in public to a Jewish and non-Jewish audience. What are some of the issues we ought to put ahead?
One is, can you publicly make Pisgei Halacha in a public forum?
Okay, what's the problem with that? Why is it a problem? We're in a shir right now. Maybe that's why so many people don't come to shir, right? We have a big forum called YU Torah. We have another forum called Torah Anytime. I don't think that they make you present a Jewish card. Right, the Gavris people in Israel who check, they don't check to make sure that you're indeed, from birth. You don't have to present the letter from a rabbi to listen to a shir. Why is that mutter? So Yossi says there's something about presenting Pisgei Halacha. There are a lot of shirim on YU Torah, not all of them are. I give shirim on YU Torah, by the way, just for the record. You know, when you collect this week's points, the ponder can be found in such a. This shir will eventually wind up on YU Torah, which means that if we come out that it's a problem, we have a real problem. So if you're listening to this, you already know the answer, right? But what are the issues at hand? Go ahead.
I don't have a halacha.
It's fine.
Problem, but it could sound ridiculous to non-believing people. So it's like a chilul Hashem in a way.
Okay. We'll have to debate that question. But okay. It sounds that's a good point. That's an interesting point. Now, what Tamara is saying
assumption that sounds.
So you don't think it's acceptable. You think that if the audience is going to make fun of it,
yeah.
Right, then it could lead to Chilul Hashem. Let me ask you a question. What if the audience thinks that wrapping a leather box to leather straps around your arm is a Chilul Hashem, and you're on a flight that goes for, one of those really long flights from San Francisco to Timbuktu, right? And you got no choice. You got to put on tefillin at some point. So were you supposed to give up the day of tefillin because there's a potential for Chilul Hashem?
And you're not like coming up and giving the reasons. This is like an optional thing that you're giving, and they're coming to it. They're going to come to the. I just don't think they're as especially by. I just think I don't know exactly how to word what I'm saying. I don't know about Chilul Hashem. That's a strong way to say it, but
okay.
It sounds ridiculous.
Like, okay. So good.
Yeah.
Okay. Then now I'm beginning to understand what you're saying a little bit. We'll get back to that in a second. It's also a good point. Anything else we have to think of? Anything else? So we'll see in a moment. Let's start off with
you're going to tell halacha to Jews that are not going. We're not going to keep the halacha.
Right. So is there a problem with that?
Yeah.
That's good because I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Because I never knew that you're allowed to, that there was a problem. Although now I'm listening and hearing you say that, so like, wait a minute. There is a halachic concept called mutav shiyu shogigin ve'al yu mezidin. The idea that it's better that you leave somebody and have them violate a Torah law by accident, so to speak, rather than like, know this is the wrong thing to do and do it anyway.
Depends on what you're doing. Are you offering a perspective on an issue from a Torah basis, which is not necessarily a psak halacha,
right?
Or are you saying that according to Judaism, this is what must be done in this situation 100%? There's different ways of framing it.
So it's funny, I had a conversation with Rabbi Teitz today because of what I'm about to tell you. Let's start at the beginning. There is a Gemara in Moed Katan on Daf Tezayin, and I think this will help you a little bit with the point you were making before. The Gemara tells the story about how Rebbe made a gezera, and he said the gezera was shelo yishanu le'talmidim b'shuk. Don't teach Torah to your students in public. right? And what was the source? So get this, Tamar, I'm going to enjoy this one. My Drosh, what was the source? And the answer is, it's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Chamukei yirei chayach kamo chaloim. It's like the thighs. Ma yerech beseser, just like a thigh, is something that men and women cover up. We don't walk around, you know, exposing everything to the wind, right? So too, divrei Torah also have to have a certain aspect of tznius to them. So it's sort of similar to what you were saying before, this concept that you were raising before, when you're like, I wouldn't call it Chilul Hashem, but there's a way and a time and a place to present Torah. And at every single place and location, it carries a responsibility of privacy. So here's the question, though, with that. Is it really, you entertain the idea that this falls into the category of Chilul Hashem? I think we both walked back a drop from that term. We'll see why if we get to the question I think you're waiting for me to deal with tonight.
What's the difference in a conference or a smaller group or a one-on-one?
So that's a good question. Where are you going with that?
Well, let's say maybe it's different in a larger forum, but maybe if somebody asks you privately,
in MetLife Stadium?
Right. So it's a very good point. Yeah, we're going to make this huge thing, and every single new, they're going to be Japanese guys who will show up. They have almost nothing to do, but they'll be at outside MetLife Stadium in January 2019. Why? I'm sorry, 2020. To be there for the Siyum HaShas. It's going to shut down the New Jersey, because, you know, the Jews coming all think that it's like 13th Avenue. So they're going to shut down, just like they did last time, the turnpike. They'll park the cars right there on the turnpike, right? Yeah, just like you double park and triple park on 13th Avenue. Very good. He says, Bishvili Nevarolim. That's a safer we learned before Meyerab on Thursday. It's very funny. But, you know, that's what it was 6.5 years ago. That's exactly the situation in the middle of the summer. All of a sudden, couldn't understand, why is everyone parking on the sides? You know, okay. But what's the problem over here with this issue of, I don't understand, we have a public declaration of Torah all the time. We have masses getting together to study Torah all the time. Right? People get together, they get to hear drushes, they come together for siyumim, they get together. Every time you have 10 people together, it's called a mass, right? Not that type of mass. I'm talking about a critical mass. It's called farhesia, it's called public. So what's the Gemara talking about over here, Moi Katan? What's the challenge over here with teaching Torah in public? Huh?
You said...
No, I'm saying... What,
in your question, you said
well, but I'm not even... Oh, good. We'll get to that. I was waiting for someone to bring that up. Now you did, but I'll get there in the second half. Let's first deal with Tamar's issue first. Yes, but that's not. But that's not the Gemara's assumption over here. So in his comments on the Gemara over there, Moi Katan, Rabbi Yashiv actually Zatzal points out. He says, "You know what the problem is?" Mm-hmm. He says, "I don't understand what the issue was here was in teaching Torah in public." Listen to the language here. He says, "Very Adarabba, Yesh Inyan Lefarsei Ma Torah Berabim." He says, "There's a big deal. We're supposed to teach Torah in public, right? That's what we're supposed to do." Upok Chazibi Amenu. He says, "Take a look at where we're up to in our lives." Shemagdilim Torah B'chol Makom. We do our best to teach Torah everywhere. The more, the merrier. So he says, "You want to understand? The issue is not the marketplace. What's the issue? The issue is that a person is not supposed to, you want to have a public shiur, have a public shiur, right? That's not the problem. What's the problem? You have to have a Beis HaMedrash in a quiet place, in a Makom Tanua. Why? Because if you teach in public, what's going to happen? You're going to think of yourself a certain way. The guy who gives the shiur in front of the masses, right? I tell this to myself to make myself feel good sometimes. Right? The other guy, he's got 750 people, and it's only 10. I used to joke, you know, in the shul I grew up in, so Kanai Har, it's a very, very large shul. So every so often, I bump into a friend of mine who lives in the community there. He says, the shul, maybe 10% of the people go for Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. Maybe 10% of the people go for Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. 10% of that shul is 200 people. Right? It's 200 people come to Yeshua. So he says to me, but it's still 10%. I said, 200 people is a lot of people to show up, and that's only 10%. So I kibitz with somebody about that. So you come into the shul, 2,000 people standing there, right? Forget it. But if you go into the market, the business stops because you're there and you're teaching, and they've got those big screens, right? Because you have to have the big screens. What do you think is going to happen? How do you think you're going to feel? So Two siyume hashas ago, I went to the siyum hashas with Rav Tights. Right? We're on the same train. Then it was in the garden. Right? So as we're traveling, I think we were going in there, and he didn't say a word about where he was sitting. Right? He didn't say a word about it. We went, we joked, we had a whole nice conversation the whole way. I get there, I go to my assigned seat, right? And Rav Tights disappears. Next thing I know, right after the CMI shot starts, where's Rav Tights? Right behind the podium. Right? So I told him the next day, woo-wee! Right? You're right behind the podium. And they did a whole big thing about Dafa Shavua and how incredible it was. And Rav Tights says to me, it was the most uncomfortable place he's ever sat before. He told a joke, he couldn't fall asleep, but I know what he meant. What was the thing? He doesn't like to be on display. He doesn't like to be on display. Says Rav Yashiv, the critical issue with the publicity is that the person who goes and teaches Torah Barabbim in the marketplace, he has to be careful about himself, lest he lord it over other people. And if that's the case, his actions lack the perspective of tzinius for himself. Instead, what does it lead to? What midah would that demonstrate? There you go. And so therefore, the critical thing about this process should be that the person should study Torah in a Beis HaMedrash. Moshe Feinstein adds that, let's face it, if you have a choice between learning in the marketplace and learning in a Beis HaMedrash, what do you think the difference is going to be when you learn outside? I don't know about you guys. I went to elementary school in Long Beach, not California, right? In the springtime, when it got too hot in the classrooms, because we didn't have air conditioning, right? In the summer, when it was 80 degrees, the last couple of weeks of school, right? The Rebbe sometimes helped pay for us, took us out to a parking lot to sit over there and learn Torah. Let me tell you something. Once we was there, he might as well not have taught us a word, because you know what? The bottom line is we were thinking about the summer already, and he knew it. It's just too hot in the classroom. But the concentration, gone, right? And that person needs to understand, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Igros Moshe, Ebenezer, Chelek Kimmel, Simon Yerbeis, he says that it's better for the concentration if a person is indoors, and it's also better for the gaiva, as Rav Yashiv also says over there in Moed Katan, because in the market, why is the person learning in the market? Why is the person learning in the marketplace? You go to the marketplace, I'll tell you. You always knew that guy who, when he was walking around, he always made sure to be sitting with the biggest Gemara, right, on the bus, in the Eged bus, right? You get onto the Eged bus, and he's holding the Chasson Shas Gemara, and he's got his head inside. You want to know why? Why is he using that? Sometimes, what? He wants people to know that he's learning. That's not always the best way, the best reason for a person to be learning. So the first thing that we need to understand is this idea of chamuke yirechayech, this idea that there should be, which is pretty much where the direction you were going with your conversation when you analyze the question, it's far from wrong. So this leads us to Elizabeth. All roads lead through Elizabeth. And so, of course, this issue came to a head when Rav Tights Zatzal started to teach the daf on the radio. He was the pioneer of technology and public teaching on the radio. So, of course, some people came out with their arms screaming, how could you teach Torah on the radio? Because you know what happens when you teach Torah on the radio? Anybody can access it. And so why are you not concerned about Chamukei Yerechayech? So I'm on the phone with Rabbi Tights. He says, I think my father wrote a tshuva about that. And the answer is, yes, he did. And do you know where you can find that tshuva? In the Daf HaShavua Gemaras, there was once upon a time, people didn't have easy access to Gemaras. So Rav Tights, if you needed something, Rav Tights Zatzal took care of it for you. If it was involved in your Limud HaTorah, somehow he managed. So together with the Daf HaShavua, he would print Daf HaShavua special Gemaras. Every so often, if you dig deep enough around the different kretchemers of the different buildings of the JC, you may find one. The collector's items, they're worthwhile. So in the front of the one on Masechta Chagiga, there's a small letter where Rav Tights Zatzal specifically turns around and he says that he was asked about the question, and he says, I have to tell you the truth. He says, he quotes the Gemara over here, and then he turns around and he says, you have to understand, there were periods in time where we did have public declarations. Like one that comes to mind is also every 7 years. Hakel, that's right. He says, well, now all of a sudden we can't have a Hakel? He says that the Gemara speaks of a place where you can teach the students in private, but we also had something called a Yarchikala. The Yarchikala system was that during 2 months of the year, Everybody came to the yeshiva to learn in public. Which were the 2 months of the year? Tishrei and Nisan. Everyone came to the Kala. There were thousands and thousands of people who would show up in the major yeshivas. Those things had to be in public. So clearly, to state that you're never allowed to learn in a larger environment is clearly wrong. And then he quotes from the Aruch Laner and Sukkah Daf Mem Tes, who notes that there's a difference between being Lomei Torah and being Dorish Torah. And Rabbi Teitz felt that he had a responsibility to make sure that the people understood that there was a concept of Limud HaTorah. And so he decided to teach Torah on the radio, which was fascinating because there was a journal called Hapardes. And in 1973, they reported on an episode that took place in 73. In the land of Israel, the chief rabbi at the time, the Ashkenazic chief rabbi at the time was the late great Rav Shlomo Gorin. And Rav Shlomo Gorin dealt with a lot of tough questions. One of the famous questions that he dealt with was a case called the Ach V'Ha'achos, the brother and the sister, who insisted on figuring out what their status was, and lo and behold, there was some very major concern that this young brother and sister were actually Mamzerim. And so this was a major issue all over the world. It was known as the Langer case. A tremendous amount of rabbinic ink was spent on trying to deal with the Langer case. Rav Gorin was the person who was dealing with the shadow firsthand, got on the television, and on a 60 Minutes type of program, and he announced that in his opinion, that the Mutter Lovo Bakal, and that was that. And he offered certain perspectives. So there was a rally, supposedly, in Lower Manhattan, and Moshe Feinstein spoke, and then the other speaker at the rally was Rav Teitz Zatzal. So Rav Teitz gets up after Moshe, totally trashed Rabbi Gorin's opinion from a halachic perspective. Listen to the language of Rav Teitz, because I found it critical. Lo adaber kan ata al halamda shel Rav Gorin. I don't want to get into a halachic discussion. I'm not going to debate the logic behind it. And I'm not going to debate the psak din. There's only one thing I can't stay away from. I have one major taina. Now, watch this for a second and listen carefully. When are you allowed to explain a Rambam on 60 Minutes? When are you allowed to explain a halacha, through the radio? Who is talking? Who's in the middle of the speech? Beforewards, when do you offer an opinion about the validity of a get the validity of a certain shtar based on an ad in the forwards? Folks, who used to take ads in the New York Times to offer opinions about driving to shul on Yom Narayim and about if the reform go through with accepting patrilineal descent, that you can determine who's a Jew based on whether your father was Jewish? Who was the one who took out a front page ad in 1983, if I'm not mistaken, to state that that if you do such a thing, you're going to destroy your relationship? Who is that? Who? So, but here's the man himself. Chamukei Reichayach Amar Shlomo HaMelech. It says Chamukei Reichayach V'Agamor Doreshes Rabbeinu Hakosh Omer Mayerech B'Seiser Afelu B'Seiser. Rabbi Teitz said the Gemara. He quotes our Gemara, and so therefore he says Torah Eina Nivsekes Al Yedei Televizia. The Torah is not paskined on the television. V'Lo Al Yedei Aradio. Torah is not paskined on the radio, right? V'Lo Al Yedei Tonim. Torah is not paskined in the newspapers. Torah nemra v'nidona omnam b'shuk. Torah can be stated and it can be judged in the market, right? It can be discussed. Abul b'shuka d'rabbanan, but only in the marketplace of the rabbis. You know where that is? Right here in the shir room, right next door in the Beis Hamedrash. That's where Torah is supposed to be discussed. Be yeshivas. So I stopped. I looked. Wait a minute, Rabbi Teitz. Did you forget that you wrote a letter, in front of the, Daf of Shavua Gemaras? So how do you put the two pieces together? And of course, I did not have the opportunity to ask Rav Teitz this question, so I did the next best thing. I asked Rav Teitz to ask his father, right? Joking aside, honestly, if you really want to know what Rav Teitz Atzal held, go ask his son, our Rav. And so I said to my head, Rav Tice offered me one perspective today, and when we were debating the issue, I offered a broader perspective in the past, and I think he did not disagree with my position. What Rav Tice told me when I asked him what his father meant, after all, his actions don't fit his actions. I said, what are you talking about? Nevi'im were sitting in the marketplace forever, screaming and telling people to give them Musar. And when nobody turns around and says the Nevi'im were not allowed to because of Chamukei Yerechayech. So when my father took out ads in the New York Times, he wasn't teaching Torah through the New York Times, which is a big problem because, you know, the ever popular question, can you take the New York Times, can you take the Jewish press into the bathroom? No. Can you take it out? Well, there's no question about the New York Times, right? So if Rabbi Tice is now teaching Torah in the New York Times, and now all of a sudden, oi, what are we going to do about the situation? The answer is no. What's under discussion over here is just a tochacha, a musar. And so therefore he felt for that, that's not a problem, Chamukei Yerechayech. Where else are you going to teach the Reform? You're going to ask them to come inside to the Beis HaMedrash? Hey, can you come inside so we can turn around and tell you that you're not going to be Jewish? Yeah, sure, go ahead and tell us. There's no, it doesn't work that way. The world doesn't run that way. So instead, Rabbi Tice says, yeah, there has to be a place where you can be mephizing, where you can explain what the words of Torah are. You have to show the world, the people, to get them to understand and to do tshuva. And he says the Nevi'im worked that way. So I said to him, but what about the Dafa, the contradiction over there? So he said to me, I understand people wrote tshuvas about that, including my father. So I said, that's right, that's exactly why I'm on the phone with you. So I wanted to suggest that there's a difference between teaching Torah and debating Torah. If you listen to the Daf HaShavua, and I had the pleasure today to talk to not only Rav Tice, but I also spent a lot of time with one of my rabbeim, with the Mashgiach, with Rav Yossi Blau today. I was in the yeshiva today. So I happened to mention it to him also. I said he thought that my logic made sense. The issue with Rav Goren was, this was a real deep, intense issue. And in order to present the words of Psak Halacha, the place to do that is first to debate that issue with an environment, with a group that is able to go ahead and debate. How often is it that we read an article that was published by a certain person claiming to be a rabbi? And the person who's claiming to be the rabbi is, it's very nice, and he gets a lot of public support because it sounds good. And he's saying what we want him to say. So in that situation, well, what happens to us? You know, people aren't looking at the sources. They don't look at the materials. When you really want to issue a psak halacha, make sure that it fits with the people who are up to date, right? You know, some of the major issues of our day. You pick the issue. Pick today's exciting contemporary issues. And somebody wants to write a more left-leaning position may get a lot of accolades. But it doesn't mean that that's the right psak halacha. First, go ahead and debate it in the environment where it's supposed to be debated. You can still get the accolades if it turns out that you're right, la halacha. But that's the difference. As opposed to the opportunity to teach Torah, as long as you're not a Baal Gaiva, right? Go ahead and go and proceed and do so. This is my suggestion. In the past, when I brought it to Rabbi Tice, I think he thought that, yeah, his father would have agreed to that as well. There is a second issue to look at over here when we deal with the question of the guy who's standing in front of the podium. And what's the second issue? Josh said it before. Second issue is, you said to me the audience is half Jewish, half not Jewish. And here we come to a different Gemara. The Gemara in Chagiga points out on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ami in Mosin Divrei Torah Lenachri. We're not allowed to teach Torah to non-Jews. How do you know that? The answer is, we say it every day. What do we say? It says in Tehillim, Lo asachein l'chogoi u'mishpatim bal yedo'um. You're not supposed to make sure, you're not supposed to help them understand the words of Torah. In fact, the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim Perek Yud Halacha Tes Paskins, that an akum she'asak b'torah chayav misa, that a non-Jew who studies Torah is chayav misa. So how are you supposed to make sense out of that? So the Marashoyim Masechta Chagiga over there on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph comments, he says, if that's the case, that it says a motion divrei Torah. Why doesn't it say you can't teach a malamdin? What does it mean you don't give it over? So he says you have to understand there's a difference. What's the difference? There are times where you have a responsibility to give over the divrei Torah to a non-Jew. What are the instances? Shev mitzvos b'nei Noach. They have a responsibility. So he says that you have to understand when we talk about a mosrin means Don't give them all the depths of the mitzvahs, right? There are two ways to study. My siblings talk about this all the time. Mr. J, just do me a favor and check the stove. Something, do me a favor, give a check, right? My siblings always say that sometimes people get a little bit too excited about the about who's studying Torah or whatever. So certain schools, they do not allow certain students, perhaps of a female persuasion, to study Torah from inside the sefer. Instead, what they do, only from paper sheets, only the most basic formula. I'm not here to debate women's learning Torah tonight because we've already had the opportunity from Rabbi Oretz, and I'm sure he's still going to come back this year and finish up on that conversation because he keeps coming back to it with different avenues. But one thing we say for a fact is that there's a very big difference between women who are studying Torah, who certainly have an opportunity to study the Torah, and they have a responsibility to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, and a Nachri, who the deeper you take the Nachri into the depths of the understanding of the secrets behind the mitzvahs of the Torah, right, that the more you're taking him away from telling him what to do and helping him be mekayim sheva mitzvos, and instead you're giving him the eighth mitzvah. And what's that? Limud HaTorah. We're not supposed to go ahead and do that. By females, not a problem. They're part of us. You guys are part of us. You say, you should understand our Torah. It'll develop a certain sense of sweetness. The question is, do you have to do that? That's a different ballgame, right? But for a Nachri, it's a real problem to be Moshe. This becomes a major, major debate out of the city of Hebron. Why? Because there was a famous Reb Chaim Medini, who was the author of a famous encyclopedic work called, remember, the Stechemed. Right, and in the Stechemed, in Mareches Aleph Os Kuf Beis, he has a long, long debate about teaching Torah to non-Jews. And he says, first thing I have to point out to you is, there's a difference between teaching them Torah Shebaal Peh and teaching Torah Shebiksav. You can teach Torah Shebiksav, right? And he quotes from the Maritz Chiyas in Masech Nesota, who says that, if you don't believe this, that you can teach Torah Shebiksav to a Nachri, Bnei Yisrael have kind of a little bit of a problem. Why did Bnei Yisrael have a problem? Because how did they get the Torah in before they were Megayer? They had we know that at Yamsuf, right? They Shum Sum Lo Choku Mishpat, that they got certain mitzvahs at that point in time. How did they get mitzvahs at that time? They weren't Jewish yet. When did the Jews become Jewish? Matan Torah, a little bit early. This is a pretty good question, though. Also, we say that maybe it was before Matan Torah, right? You know the famous story, Hashem gave us a present. He asked the other nations, do you want a gift? And they said, no, thank you. For Torah, we have no time. How could you have given them something if they're not allowed to learn it? They had to be able to look inside, right? And that's what they said. What does it say in the Torah? What God was supposed to fool them? And the process must be Torah Shebiksav. There must be, says the Stechemed, it must be that for Torah Shebiksav, there must be some sort of heter. Others go a little bit further, and they take a different perspective. They say, for instance, there's the comments of the Netziv, and the Netziv writes in the Tshuva, he says that the only issur is Torah Shebaal Peh, and that appears in the Meshav Davar, Chelek Beis Simenai in Zion. The Sfasemes and Chagiga says also he thinks that there's a basis for such a differentiation. So, first of all, if all you're going to do is get up at that presentation and present this Torah Shebiksav, gig isn't the hate. So suggests many of the poskim, although the Stechemet agrees that this is a debate. But how you get up at a bioethical conference and only present Pesukim in the Torah, I have no idea. Right? The Ramban al Torah in Parshas Vayishlach in the story of Dina, so he assumes that that when you're talking about the mitzos of Sheva mitzos b'nei Noach, what's the first among them? No, okay. So the last among them
would be
setting up a system
of dinim.
Of dinim, right? That you had that non-Jews have a responsibility to do what? To have a system of justice. So can you tell me what that means? What does that mean? How are we supposed to set up a system of justice? So the Rambam says they're supposed to have rules. Right? Make up some rules. United States Constitution. Right? And you're supposed to have rules. The Ramban says that's not so. He says they have a responsibility to appoint judges. That's the mitzvah of dinim. And that's the mitzvah kumbase. But there's also a sheval tasa aspect to it. And what's that? He says that all dinim mamonos in the Torah, Oshek, Schar Sachir, Mekach Umemkar, right? All the rules of business, theft, rape, Avos Nezik, and all the mitzvahs, Bein Adam L'Chavero, right? They have a responsibility to know that if somebody violates any of those things that appear in Torah, they have to judge the person appropriately and exert the proper punishment. Now, let me ask you a question. Where are those judges supposed to come from? Ostensibly, if it's responsibility of the goyim, who are the judges? We assume goyim, right? Because the Jew has to judge al pi dinei haTorah, all of them, all 613. So somehow a non-Jew is supposed to become a baki, an expert in choshen mishpat and Eben HaEzer, in order to judge all the dinim based on their laws. Ergo, where's he supposed to get all that? Answer: he must be getting it by learning Torah. Right? There must be a responsibility, says the Ramban, for a Nachri to study certain aspects of our Torah. And there, that, of course, just raised a very... If you're going to follow the Ramban, we just solved a lot of crises in our question about the legal conference and the bioethical conference. You understand why? In other words, according to the Ramban, if I have a responsibility to give this lecture... Why? Because according to Ramban, when I debate the Torah's perspective on you name the bioethical issue, or you name the legal issue, or the advance in technology from a Torah perspective issue, I have a responsibility to teach not only the Jews who are in the crowd, but also the Nachri in the crowd. Why? Because he has to know how to judge cases. He has to know the legal responsibility. Why? Because he's mitzvah. The problem with this is that... Go ahead.
If it's a doctor, it's a conference of doctors. Doctors aren't judging anything, right?
Really? Let me ask you a question. Let's say I have a following situation that comes into play, bioethics. Right? There's discussion about whether the cessation of life happens when there is no longer any overt cerebral activity. So, you know, let's say that's the bioethical dilemma at hand. Right? Now, you'll say to me, that's not really a legal discussion. It's a little bit more of a bio one. Really? Let me ask you a question. Let's say we debate the issue. What's one of the bases of that issue? What happens if we decide that the lack of major cerebral activity means quality of life is no longer here? Let's disconnect. What are we really asking?
When does life start to stop?
Right. And if that's the case, we're dealing with the question of potential murder. Right? Now all of a sudden you just took a bioethical dilemma and it just became a legal one, right? I'll do it on the other side of life, right? You know, let's say we deal with a question of a right to choose, right? Or better yet, at what point in time can somebody abort a fetus or a baby, choose, depending on which side of the issue you're debating the question, right? Depends on how you deal with the language in the question. Now you were asked at a conference, please present on this subject. What are the ramifications of quality of life in the schizophrenic? What about the ramifications of taking certain medications? Wait, we have to start debating with questions like, you know, certain anesthesias. Dobie's not here, but, you know, I take a certain anesthesia. Morphine, I think, is the one that I remember most. Because I remember going to visit a friend of mine who had a collapsed lung. Right? Tell me if I got the right situation at hand. So this guy, this guy that collapsed on, they put him on a morphine drip, where he was in control. So I found that like fascinating. It's the first time I had seen this. This is many, many, many years ago. And I said, wow, that's amazing. What are you doing? He goes, I'm controlling how much morphine. I said, that's awesome. You can dump the whole thing into your system? He goes, yeah, and I knock myself out. Totally. I said, so I understand why you're listening to me. He says, there are different ways to anesthetize yourself, you know. I can knock myself out more than one way. So he says to me, you know, we were both in grad school at the time. So he says to me, it's apparently like this amazing thing that they discover that if you have control over the morphine, and I actually looked this up, it's true. If you control the morphine, you actually use less than if they're in control, right? It's just a fascinating thing scientifically. But what do you know about too much morphine? Yeah, thank you. And there you have it from my dentist, right? So it'll kill you. Morphine, right? So even the question on at a meeting of the anesthesiologists of America, right, of which apparently I am a card-carrying member, because as this fellow told me once, you and I both put people to sleep, right? They were a lot of fun people in my old school, right? So you know, even over there, the bioethical dilemmas, when you're looking at them from a Jewish perspective, do contain issues that would fall into the realm of dinim. And according to Ramban, right, that's it. You just took care of the entire situation. You know what the problem with that is? The Ramban goes, are you really serious? He doesn't like this idea. The Rambam doesn't like the idea, right? And he says, the Ramah, in Charles Chuvis Ramah Simon Yud, he argues that the dinim of Bnei Noach aren't connected to the details of the Torah. You have to be very careful. Chasim Silver agrees with him in that, and even the Netziv in the She'iltos in Parshas Mishpatim, She'ilos and Nunches, Sivkat and Aleph, argues against the Ramah on that issue, and he says he thinks that the argument of this Ramban works very much to a person's favor. So, ergo, if I follow and hold like the Ramban, I solve my crisis. Go ahead, please get up at legal conferences. If I don't go and I follow the Rambam and the Ramah, I'm back to where I started from, right? Why am I teaching this crowd? And, you know, the crowd doesn't want to hear you get up and sing nursery rhymes or tell over a good vort from, you know, from the rabbi. You know, when they're at a conference, they want to hear the legal basis for things. Am I allowed to go ahead and do so? And why is that not a violation of giving them the Divrei Torah? So the Ungvar Rav, Rav Menashe Klein, Chelek Hei of Shaus Tshuvas Mishnah Halachos, Simon Kufayin Beis, he says, in his opinion, he thinks there are a lot of different reasons why you're allowed to present at a conference. He says, first of all, if you're presenting a Torah Shabbat Sav, certainly not a problem. Then he says, don't get into the major, major details, but to explain the mitzvos and why we have the mitzvos, that's a good thing to do. To get into why the ktos and the nesivos debate on where each one held and what the chakira is that the Brisky Rav wanted to... that far you don't have to go, right? He says... He says. Also, the Turi Eben says, if he's doing it because you're there, and you want him to do it, you want him to understand so he can know how to follow. He thought that's also not a problem. And he says, what's the main reason behind the issue of umishpatim ba'yidaum? If you give them too much, what's going to happen? You're going to go follow them. Now, the next day, today Rav Tzitz will give Daf Yomi, and tomorrow Father Rahim will give Daf Yomi. We don't want that to happen in Judaism, but if that's not the case, then it's not going to be a problem. Then he adds another thing. He says, and this is where he really debates and backs up Rav Tzitz with the radio program. He says, the other thing you have to ask yourself is why you present it. Now, in terms of teaching Torah on the radio, if you happened to get into WEVD and your name was McGillicuddy, and you said, hey, I like this rabbi's voice, even though I don't, and I love Yiddish, right? And so every Saturday evening, I turn into Mr. Pesenko and the rabbi with the funny language, and I listen to whatever it is he's teaching, and then eventually I become Colin Powell, and I'm fluent in Yiddish, and I'm listening to Daf HaShavua every week. So he says, but that Rabbi Tzitz was not teaching on the radio for Colin Powell, who, by the way, does speak a fluent Yiddish, right? Rabbi Tzitz was teaching on the radio for whom? For the Jews. And at the conference, when Rabbi J. David Bleich comes to teach Torah into the masses, he'll present at legal conferences. Who do you think he's presenting for? Well, he doesn't think that the people who are coming to listen to the Jewish perspective are coming just, you know, he's got a couple of Jews there at each conference, and so he makes it his business. So here the Ungvar Rav turns around and he suggests that the reason why you can teach Torah in the public, assuming that we're careful for your point from before, that it's not for my own self-aggrandizement, but I'm really interested in teaching the masses. So here he says it's not going to be a problem.
Is that related to question
three? Well, I'm going to get there in a second, right? Let me just finish the idea, right? So Rabbi Tzitz also reminded me today, he says, but don't forget to explain this 3-day ish. He says, what? He says, it's 3-day ish. So I look back at my notes, and sure enough, this 3-day ish, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, and Charles Tshuva's 3-day ish, Chelek Beis Simon Nun Vav. He says, you know, you also have another reason why you don't have a problem of umishpatim ba'yidom. And what's that? He says, you know, if somebody's going to be able to develop a certain sense of appreciation for the Torah, not a bizayon for the Torah. So that's not a problem, Mishpatim Bayidom. That he says quite the opposite. If somebody's going to study Torah and come to an appreciation and a love, if not, we never have any gerim. Because to be a ger, you have to know something. Right? So you have to have the ability to get to the point. So Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg says, if it starts off from a basis of love, he didn't think that that was going to be a problem. So again, we start off with the question so far of, why is it that, you know, am I allowed to teach Torah in public? What about YU Torah? What about Torah anytime? What about Daf HaShavua? We identified two major issues that came into play over here. We looked at the issue of Chamukei Recher, Tamar's discussion, that Torah has to have a certain degree of tznius attached to it. That is to say, the antithesis of gaiva, the antithesis of a person's personal glorification, and a person who's teaching Torah in public always has to be careful about that. It's not about me. It's about the Torah of Hashem. I'm just a kli. I'm a utensil. And it's about concentration, says Rav Moshe. And then the second question, which is a bigger question, was the Umishpatim Bayidom. And we identified that idea as well. And we took it apart as well. And what we also identified in that context is the understanding that there are a lot of different bases to argue in favor, even in those situations, ranging from teaching Torah Shebiksav versus Torah Shebalpeh, and getting all the way up to the fact that if your goal is to make the Divrei Torah Chaviv in the world, so there's a basis, Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg says, to be able to go ahead and allow one to teach Torah even in those public forms. Should we try one more? Yeah. So Yudi wants me to go to number two, and I'm okay with that. Okay? Unless anyone really feels otherwise. The question number two, for those of you who don't remember, huh? You okay? So look, next week, that's why we're going to play Trash the Lines next week. Right? I don't know if he still does it. One of the radio guys says he used to do that in the last 10 minutes of his radio program. Every day he would trash the lines. What does that mean? Anyone who's on the line, you got 5, 10 seconds to say what you wanted and go from there. Here, again, the debate that took place on Shabbos as to whether a person who's going to be involved in a Maisa Aveira should take off his yarmulke, right? Should the person wear a yarmulke or should the person not wear a yarmulke?
We discussed that at Chibur in the past.
And what do we decide? So there is such a Gemara. We mentioned such a Gemara in the past. That is correct. But what are the issues at hand? Before we get to that Gemara, because that Gemara can be interpreted a lot of different ways. I think we actually did debate that issue.
Where is the guy doing? Does it matter?
Well, you tell me.
I mean, I don't know. If he's like stealing money, is he having an affair? Like, what's he doing?
Tell me what difference it makes. Go ahead.
It's a blatant Chilul Hashem.
Well, if it's something that everybody does, it's less of a Chilul Hashem. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, the guy's, we're held to a different standard anyway. It doesn't matter. Everybody else does it.
But certain things are not going to appear like a total avera. Like, for example, having an affair, no one knows the woman's not his wife. Right? But if he's stealing money or doing something that's
illegal. Oh, so you're telling me, okay. So, he's a good husband. He's going to hold you. He's going to hold that point you made before, right? Across the board. You mentioned Chilul Hashem before. He's coming right back and saying, no, don't drop that subject. My wife was right from the beginning to bring up the issue. You know what? If I didn't answer you before because I challenged it, this is the reason why I challenged it. Because I wanted us to get into exactly that point that you're bringing up. What is a Chilul Hashem? Right? And obviously, the debate goes both ways. And Josh, we have to obviously work in your situation as well. That Gemara and Kiddushin that we mentioned before. So let's start to put the pieces together. Go ahead.
What's on the flip side?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, obviously, we all agree on the one side.
Well, we still haven't answered the question about yarmulke versus no yarmulke. Well, I just want to point that out. We just put the issues on the table.
So on the flip side, is it because no matter what you're doing,
One second, the people are listening, and they send me notes again that they can't hear all the debates. Right?
On one side, it's clear the Chilul Hashem aspect, but on the other side, is the issue why you wouldn't have to keep your yarmulke on, either because regardless of what you're doing, you still have the Chiyuv or the mitzvah, or is it also like a getter? Because maybe if we say you can't take it off, you may think twice of not doing it because you know.
Yudi is presenting the counterpoint. He goes, "Well, wait a second. What? Okay, But Yudi's presenting the counterpoint. He says, "Wait a second. We're wearing yarmulke is a responsibility." Right, so now all of a sudden you're gonna do. Who's it? You're gonna be mechal shem shemayim. So now you should also take off your yarmulke too.
If
right?
Yarmulke is a minhag, and you could avoid an issue, you're a race of chilul Hashem to violate a minhag. I mean, I know minhag is very strong, but if you can avoid it, it's your
right. You should say pashut simple minhag.
I said, fine, but if you could avoid it,
it's
the derisive
chil
Hashem by taking off your
yarmulke,
maybe it's worth
it. So, one second, if it's a shas hashmad, right, in a situation where the goyim are out to destroy all the Jews, right? One second, let me just finish the idea. Let me just finish the idea. And you know that it's 1939 in Germany, right? Rahman Litzlan. And somebody, a Jew is stopped in the street, and he's told, he has a gun. Right, I want you to put your left shoe on first. Right? Now there is a minhag, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, that when you get dressed, what should you do? Put your right shoe on first. What is the halacha in such a situation? In public, the guy says, put your left shoe on first. You never cared in the first place. You haven't been so careful about putting the right. And I'm just saying, let's say you're that person who never cared in the first place. What's your obligation in that situation, Yossi? Okay, so here's my question to you. You're telling me if you're in Germany, you sound like the comment I brought from Natan Sharansky last week at Shal Shudas. And for those who weren't here, so last week at Shal Shudas we were talking about Maos Tzur. And so along the way I quoted from my favorite journalist, Sivan Rahab Meir, who quoted an interview she did with Natan Sharansky, who said that in certain senses he has a greater challenge keeping mitzvahs in the year 2017 than he had in the Gulag. Why is that? Because there was no discussion. He had decided, you know, to follow Torah Hashem in the Gulag. That's it. But nowadays it's so open. The world is so open. Much more challenge, much more freedom. And so he says sometimes you have to be careful about that. Very, very deep thought. It's a scary thought, but it's a deep thought. And this was one of the points we brought up last week in understanding why at Hanukkah time we spend so much time going through all of world history in Maos Tzur, and this is one of the lessons that we took away from the experience. So Yossi, you're saying, like, you know, all of a sudden there's less of a chil Hashem or less of a challenge because I mean, in that situation here it's because I'm the one who's putting the challenge to myself as opposed to the German Nazi who's putting the challenge in front of himself. Now all of a sudden Mina can go by the wayside. I'm a little scared from that.
I just said it's not Shasta Shemad, and it is a case of personal responsibility.
Right. So the question is, what is the personal... So you guys are all floating around the same question. So let me first present a background source, and then we'll get right to the heart of the matter. Background source... Go ahead.
Just to clarify, I do believe, ultimately, you should take the yarmulke of Chil Hashem is greater. I just want to understand, what is the counter? Is it because it's the obligation of yarmulke, or is it gedur that might prevent you from doing that there because you know you can't take it off?
Okay, let's take a look at that. Let's see what Chazal tells. Now you all got your opinions locked in. Boop boop boop. Okay, here we go. Right, here we go. Gemara in Yuma, Pei Vav Amud Aleph. Gemara quotes the name of the Gemara says as follows: Roshal Rabbi Matya ben Charash, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah ben Romi. Rabbi Matya ben Charash went to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in Rome, and he said, "Did you hear? There are four chalukei kapara that Rabbi Shmuel was darshaning." So he says, "What do you mean there are four?" He says, "There are three." And so he says there are three, and there's tshuva for all of them. And if you went ahead and you violated the three and you did tshuva, Hashem said, gives you kapara. How do you know that? Because the Gemara said, the Pasuk says, shuvu banim shovavim. Well, even the wayward children always have opportunities for tshuva, right? That's what we were just learning before, right? Avalosasa vasa tshuva. Right, if you violated one of the Torah laws and you did tshuva, so then tshuva hangs over there. But Yom Kippur comes along and it helps you in it. If you did krisis, if you did a violation, there's tshuva over there. But everything has the ability except for one thing. And what's that? You do a chil Hashem. The only thing that you can do for tshuva is what? The only thing you can do for tshuva is misa. The only way to get tshuva for chil Hashem is misa. And the Gemara in Erevin on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis says, Rabbi Meir used to say, Adam Harishon Chosid Gadol Haya. Adam Harishon was a very big chassid, he was a very holy person. But Kivan Shirosh and Niknes Amisa Al Yado, Yasha B'tainis Meu Shloshim Shana. When Adam Harishon saw that he caused death to enter the world, he did this one sin, he recognized something very fundamental. And what's that? He recognized, I did something wrong. He sat and fasted for 130 years. Next week, I'm worried about the kids are going to start calling me. There are people going to call me at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, for the fast that starts at 5:09 and ends at 5:14. right? And they're going to be calling, Rabbi, do I have to fast this one? Like, it's one thing when you ask about Shavasa Bar Tammuz, but Asar Bar Teves, I kind of like laugh a little bit, right? Still, notwithstanding, you know, obviously there are shadows to come up with fasting and stuff for now. So Rav Dessler in Michta Ve'Elio in the second Chelek on page 85, Rav Dessler makes the important principle over here. He says, why was Adam HaRishon fasting 130 years? He saw that his Aveira was so serious, it brought darkness in the world. Why? Because of the Chilul Hashem it caused. What is Chilul Hashem? You've all used that term, every single one of you. Tell me what makes a Chilul Hashem. So I'll tell you a secret. You know that Gemara in Yuma that I quoted to you before? Gemara asked the question. What's Chilul Hashem? Hechidami Chilul Hashem. So Gemara says, first, the Gemara quotes Rav. Rav says, how about me? If I go ahead and I buy meat in a butcher shop on credit, I don't pay right away, bam, it's the Chilul Hashem. So Rabbi says, that depends on the community that you're in, right? Are people going to ask? Did you pay? Are you going to pay or not? So the Gemara says it depends. Rabbi Yochanan says, you know what Chilul Hashem is? He said Chilul Hashem means that I never walk 4 amos without tefillin and without the Torah. And so if people see me right walking without tefillin, what does that say? I was Mechal Hashem Shemayim. Yitzchak Tevei Rabbi Yanai says, no. If people are embarrassed of me, right? They're embarrassed about what I have to say. They're scared of quoting me because you're quoting that guy? Like, really? That's called Chilul Hashem. So it sounds like Chilul Hashem, is it more about the way people see or what they're going to learn from you? Which of the two is it? So there are three approaches that exist within Chazal. The Rial Shakar, in his commentary to Masechta Avos, in Perek Dalad, Mishnah Dalad, he says, things that are done in public and things that are done in private, Echad, the Mishnah says, Echad seisev echad begali bechilul Hashem. The Chilul Hashem can even be in things that are done in private. Now it happens to be that Rabbeinu Yonah disagrees, right? But the Riyah al-Shakar says it doesn't depend on publicity. You do something wrong, right? So that sort of goes against the point you were raising before, right? I could be Mechal Hashem even if I do an Avera that is sort of... you know, not exactly what you'd call a public style Aveira. Then there's a commentary called the Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. And there in Yuma and Daf Peivav, so he says, no, if people learn from me, then I created a Chilul Hashem. If people are going to see me, they're going to get the wrong lesson, that it's okay. That's called a Chilul Hashem, which of course means that what? The Chilul Hashem is dependent on the one committing the transgression, provided that people are going to see. And the third position is the position of the Marasha, also in Yuman Beivav. And the Marasha says, no, it's a question of the people who are looking at me. What are they going to do? If they look at me and they accuse me of doing something wrong, they're guilty of Chilul Hashem. It's not about me, it's about everybody else looking at me. So you got the three positions. The position of Riel Shakar doesn't matter. You got the position of what, if I teach people the wrong thing, and if you got the position of the Marsha, they're going to do something wrong. Now let's put that back, let's plug those three positions back into the Yarmulke Shaila and watch how things emerge, right? Position number one, the Riel Shakar. Doesn't matter. Echad Begali, Echad Beseizer, right? It's still, if I do an Avera, it's a Chilul Hashem. Right? Pick the Avera. We don't need to publicize it all over the place. A person does an Avera and he's going to be punished appropriately. He's going to be seen appropriately. Right? Question. It doesn't matter. Either way, it's a Chilul Hashem. Should he take off his yarmulke? So, based on the Riel Shakar, it doesn't matter. And so therefore, Yossi, what is the rule? Right? Well, why take it off? Right? Because it's just another potential problem. That's the way the Riel Shakar would look at it. Now let's look at it. I'm sorry?
What is that dependent on? It's just
nothing. You did an Avera. Right? And by definition, it's like, not when you do an Avera, you do an Avera plus one. Right? It's like, you know, the teacher.
So if you did it in the privacy of your own home, you're
Mahal. That's the Riel Shakar. Pretty harsh, no?
There are other aspects, too, besides Chilul Hashem, though, that happen when you do an Avera in public and you're.
Not according to the Riel Shakar.
Besides Chilul Hashem. So
right.
Other things
I'll get back to the other things.
By doing that,
right. So I'll get back to the other things. You're raising a good point. According to Tosefos Yom HaKippurim, If I teach people something, right? So then then I'm guilty of Chilul Hashem. So what would you say there? Take off the armor? Absolutely, right? What would come out of it is, according to Sefer Yom HaKippurim, right? You should take it off. Why? Because then people are going to turn around. They're going to have comments about B'nai Torah and what B'nai Torah do. And this is what B'nai Torah are all about. Now I got one versus one. Let's put the Marasha in. What does the Marasha say? Marasha says it's not about me, it's about them. What would he say about taking off the yarmulke?
Leave it on.
You're both right. Or you're both wrong. I think you're both right. Right? How so? It depends on one factor. The people who are seeing you, do they know you or do they not know you? If you're in a place where the people don't know who you are, right? They don't know who you are. And the only thing they're going to see is, right? Because I had a supervisor, Dr. Mark Perlman. I think he's still practicing. He used to tell me all the time, he was a guy who had a big flowing white beard and he was very jovial. Right? He's a jovial fellow. Right? And all my sisters, all three of my sisters had him as a professor, and they used to have a very exciting, this time of year nickname for him. Right? And they're like, you work with them? And each one of my sisters, across the board, you work with Dr. Perlman? Oh, doesn't he look exactly like? Right? And so we're sitting in supervision one day, and he says, oh, come on, you look at a person, you got to be able to learn things from them. Like, look at me, for instance. He says, you look at me. What do you see right away? You should know two things about me right away. So I said, well, what are they? He said, well, you can, I look at you, and I see that you're male. And he rolls his eyes at me. And he goes, what else? And I'm like, and I was like, you're old, right? You're clearly not 18. And so he bursts out laughing and he lifts up his hands and he goes, you were really after the Santa thing, weren't you? So he's like, I turned red, redder than I guess the suit that I was expecting him to be wearing, right? So I'm sorry. He lifts up his hand and he shows me he's wearing a marriage ring, which I had never noticed before, right? And he says to me, I'm married, right? That's the other thing you should have picked up. You know, the bottom line is, when you see a guy on the news, he's in the middle of Nowheresville, right? Nowheresville. But he gets picked up because he got caught in the seedy side of town, and he's got the thing on his head, and they're not thinking, oh, there goes a guy who came from the Catholic Church, because we usually don't wear red ones on our head, right? So instead, they're working around going, that Jew just got arrested. Okay? In that situation, Marsha says, Chilul Hashem, right? Therefore, take it off. However, says the Marsha, if the people know who you are anyway, right? So it doesn't make a difference whether you're wearing a yarmulke or not. Why?
They know
you are. So in such a situation, the Marsha would likely tell us that what? In that situation, there's no reason for you to take it off, leave it on. But there are other considerations that we have to consider in our question. We can't just stop right here. We'll get close, but we're just another couple of minutes, but we can't stop here. Because you also have to you have to understand that based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, the suggestion might sit on the page to lead a person to say that, look, if there's going to be Maris Ayin on an Afira, maybe that's bad enough. David HaMelech, for instance, when he saw that he was going to lose his life to Avshalom, so he wanted to make it look like he was an Oved Avodah Zarah. At least that way, it wouldn't look like it's so bad that Avshalom killed him, right? So he's going to take one for the team, so to speak, right? So maybe there's a basis to argue that in that situation. On the other hand, one might argue that if you take off the yarmulke, your ability to not engage in the Avera is lost, like Josh was saying before, right? And we just had this in the Gemara Menachas, Sandaf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara tells a story about a guy who was going to do a very major Aveira until he took off his tzitzis. And he goes, I can't do it, I have my tzitzis on. And remember what happened at the end of the story? The person he was going to commit the Aveira with fell in love with him. And she went to the yeshiva. She sold all that, she was quite a wealthy lady of the evening. And she sold off all her stuff and she took the money with her and she became a Rosh Kodesh. She looked for this guy and she went to Yeshiva till she found him and then she married him and she became his Rosh Kodesh. Right? And she took care of him for the rest of life. And the Gemara says, you see the power of the tzitzis. So the Gemara in Kedushin, which Josh mentioned before, if you're gonna wear the yarmulke, it's gonna hold you back from the avera. That's the Gemara that Josh mentioned before. The Gemara says, if a person feels that his yetzer is so big on him that he should go to a place where nobody knows him and he should be in a situation and he should put on the black clothing. V'yasem ashalivo chafetz. And the Mefarshim say, yeah, he should do what his heart desires. You know what his heart's gonna desire? Not a sin. After you go through all those preliminary steps, you won't come to the situation. All those considerations have to come into our question over here. So, what do we do? Lahalacha. So, Moshe Feinstein in Igris Moshe, Yerodea Chelik Bey, Sim and Lamed Gimel writes that if you're going to go, huh? Right? Very good. He goes, wear a baseball cap. Right? Ramosha, I'm sure. He's like, and he goes, yeah, I was going to say, he says, personally, I would recommend that it not be one with the interlocking NY, perhaps the California Angels. No, that's not what Ramosha says. The shadow that was put to Ramosha had to do with somebody who was going to go to a club with mixed dancing. Right? And he says, if you're going to go to the club with mixed dancing, don't take off your yarmulke. Why is that? He says, if you're going to do an avera anyway, right? Why do a second avera of going around Begilei Arosh? And besides, he says, just going into the club to do the public dancing, you should just know that's a Chilul Hashem anyway. There's another place where he discusses the issue in Or HaChaim Chelek Beis, Simen Tzadi Hei, where he argues also going to, he felt that going to certain theaters, right, and at certain types of museums, he felt, why are you adding to the Yisr? So I remember, like, you know, that person has to realize Rav Moshe was very opposed to the idea of taking off the yarmulke. Now, I like to quote from Rav Zilberstein, so I will do so, right? And in Chashukei Chemed in Bava Kama, Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, he says, what happens to the following situation? There was a certain young man who, he was a learned person, engaged in Kiruv. So one of the guys that he was getting very close with, he started Chavrusa with the fellow, right? And they're doing great. Once a week they get together to learn. One week the fellow calls him up on the phone and he says, Yedidi, he says, my dear friend, the things are a little busy in the business. I need to stay in the business. Can you meet me? So the guy goes, yeah, I guess I can go out to your office. It's not my office. Ani ba mesada. I am a restaurateur. Right? Yeah, I want to come to the restaurant. You have to eat anything. Right? Certainly it was not badat sheris. Right? You know, and he says, you don't have to eat anything. Just come here. We'll learn at a side table in the back over there. So the guy writes to Zilberstein. He goes, can I go? If I don't go, the guy's not going to have his weekly learning. Right? If I do go, what am I supposed to do about the yarmulke situation? So Zilberstein says to him, he says, I don't really feel too excited about you going into a place with a bad hechsher. Why? Because it could lead to bad practices by other people. People are going to see you. Oh, I saw him in there. It must be. However you have it, I saw guys with beards. It must be kosher.
If somebody sees you in the back of a restaurant learning with the chavrusa of somebody else and not eating anything, they're going to think that you're eating the tray.
Really? Really?
Really?
I let me tell you something. I don't think so. I have to, with all due respect, Yossi, if I see a guy in a restaurant sitting at a table with a yarmulke on his head, unless I know... all it does for me is tell me the waiters are slow.
Yossi's being so dumb. People will see him not eating and they'll say, oh,
he's learning with the restaurant. Also, because Yossi is like a good solid achron, so he's like, who never heard of the Chashuk Kechemet? Right? How could you not know that? That's exactly what's going on. That you're right, Josh. I should have assumed like that. Pashas is not like that. So Rav Zilberstein says, I had a great solution for this. Let him wear a toupee.
What?
A toupee. Okay. And let me explain. See, I'll explain it. Right? Some are cephalically challenged. Right? As I said, some are cephalically challenged. Right? And so wearing a toupee would just cover the problem. We'll save on comb-overs. Me with Sir Weatherby from Archie, the Archie comics when we were kids. Yeah, we'll be okay in that situation. So he said, he was overstating thought, yeah, wear a toupee, right? So, Rabbi Yoshua says, are you crazy? He went to his father, he went to Rabbi Yoshua, he says, are you kidding? You can't go in there. Wearing a toupee is doubly bad. Why? The people that see you think that what? Now you're walking around with a yarmulke on. Right? The people that know you, so you think you're walking around with a yarmulke. And the people who don't know you, right? They won't know that you're wearing a yarmulke. Right? What everyone said before, whether you held you should wear a yarmulke, you shouldn't wear a yarmulke, right? Everything goes by the wayside. So in summation, on this question, we'll close over here. So we asked the question, if a person's going to do an aveir, should he take off his yarmulke? Right? The debate, the famous Shabbos table debate. So here, of course, we said it depends. The big issue, obviously, which we all agree to, is the issue is not about the yarmulke. The issue is about the Chil Hashem. Is there more of a Chil Hashem or less of a Chil Hashem if the person's wearing yarmulke? So we raised the three opinions. The opinion of the Riel Shakar, the opinion of the Tosafos Yom HaKippurim, the opinion of the Maharsha as to what makes Chil Hashem. And depending on which position, that'll determine which way to go. Right? And then we mentioned Rav Moshe Feinstein along the way, who says he doesn't understand if you're going to do an Aveira and you're going to be Mechal Hashem Shamayim, Why would we allow you to also do another aveir of going around Begilui Arosh? So we also mentioned the Chashuk Echem and said sometimes you can, you know, sort of split the baby and wear a toupee. So we quoted Rabbi Yoshua was not a big fan of that suggestion. A person should not get himself into a situation where Mimanafshach, in one way or another, he's going to want to come to a situation of Chil Hashem. Tov mizeh umizeh, better than both of these situations, whether you're involved in the world at large or whether you're involved in our local world, is to realize why we wear yarmulke. And what's that? It's supposed to be a conduit for us to remind ourselves of Yir Shamayim, so that we should make sure in our lives that we are careful and we shouldn't come to situations of Chil Hashem. Okay, we'll stop here. Bezras Hashem, we'll review some of the big questions that we never got to, and in 2 weeks' time we'll be able to learn from some of our Rabbeim in the Masechta.